The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink it and criminalize our
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It's Tuesday, February 11th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us today. We're really excited today for our guest. We have got the author of Killer Weed coming into the online today on our studio. Michael Castleman will be joining us in our Reformers Reader segment. This is a nonfiction book, actually, a fiction book, actually. It's a mystery. It's a mystery around weed set in the Haight-Ashbury district in the 1960s. So quite interesting from a cultural perspective as well. We'll talk to Michael Castleman today at half past the hour. Also on today's show, Radical Rant Time. I don't know if you got to see it last night. Project Sam's founder, former Rhode Island Representative Patrick Kennedy, was on the Colbert Report last night and said at least three things that were just jaw-dropping. We're going to show those to you in the Radical Rant and give you my take on his statements that were just amazing. Also on the show, we're going to take a look at how marijuana is now becoming a hot-button political issue in some gubernatorial races around the country. Very interesting information for you on today's show. Also, we got our 420 radio news. We'll go over all of the headlines happening in states around the United States. And we've got our Daily Toker Tunes for Electric Tuesday. Electric Bob is going to be calling in and telling us about our tune today from a producer called Anushka. But I also have to share with you, earlier this morning, I did an interview. I taped a segment with Fox 35 in Orlando. A producer out there named David Martin got in touch with me. It will be appearing on February 28th, I believe. I don't know exactly which show or what time, but I will keep you posted. And he did seem to like what we had to offer here at 420 Radio. So chances are I will be a TV guest on those Orlando airwaves repeatedly. So as Florida is looking at passing a medical marijuana constitutional amendment. So I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to any opportunities I have to help spread the growing truth about marijuana. All right, folks, we got to take a little bit of a break here, help to pay the bills. And remember, you can help us to stay on the air and bring you independent marijuana journalism. Become a VIP member at 420radio.org for as little as $10 a month. Help support our mission. Also, if you know any cannabis businesses that would like to be sponsors or advertise on 420 Radio, contact me through the 420radio.org contact form. Be right back with the news after this.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow.
are starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activist to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today. 420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012. Hey, Tokers and Tokettes, Radical Russ here to introduce you to my friend Matt and all the staff at Lush LED Lighting. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED Lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. If you thought LEDs were... meet the tech of today. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Let's just say I appear at a lot of events with the masters of indoor horticulture, and the harvests I saw from Lush LED Lighting were big, tight, sticky, and very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Double your rewards and lower your expenses with Lush LED Lighting. This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, February 11th, 2014, brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition. I'm Russ Belville. Only the rich will be able to open a medical marijuana business in Illinois. Regulators drawing up proposed rules for the new medical marijuana program have instituted enormous startup costs for dispensaries and cultivation centers. To sell pot, a business will have to show $400,000 in reserve assets and shell out a $5,000 non-refundable application fee on top of a $30,000 yearly permit fee. To grow cannabis, it's $250,000 in reserve, a $25,000 non-refundable application fee, and a $200,000 annual permit. The law establishes 22 grow centers and 60 dispensaries, with 13 in Chicago, 11 in Cook County, and 3 or fewer in the remainder of the state. As for the patients in the program, they get saddled with an annual $150 registration fee, fingerprinting, and a background check for a photo identification card. And, quote, registered qualifying patients and designated caregivers are not eligible for a firearm owner's identification card or a firearm concealed carry license, end quote. Observers in Massachusetts are questioning the success of a group led by former U.S. Congressman William Delahunt in securing 3 of the 35 coveted Massachusetts medical marijuana licenses. On December 31st, Cheryl Bartlett, the state public health commissioner, indicated on a conflict of interest disclosure form that she would be selecting the license winners. 2 weeks later, Bartlett amended her statement by declaring her new deputy would be making the decisions. A month later, Delahunt's group was the only applicant to secure 3 licenses of the 20 licenses issued. Now, the Boston Globe has discovered that Bartlett held political fundraisers for Delahunt in 2005 and 2006, a fact Bartlett never disclosed as her office began reviewing applications last summer. A department spokesperson said Bartlett had no role in determining the winners of the licenses, and the delegation of authority to the deputy occurred a week before the selection committee made their recommendations. Oregon's Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing this morning concerning a bill granting the power to cities and counties to ban medical marijuana dispensaries. Senate Bill 1531, which is backed by the Association of Oregon Counties and the League of Oregon Cities, faces a potential legal challenge. Bill Taylor, the committee's legal counsel, believes that the state law gives only the Oregon Health Authority the power to regulate grow sites and dispensaries. Senator Floyd Prezansky, a longtime advocate for medical marijuana, asked, quote, "How can any local subdivision take it upon themselves to say they are not going to allow a particular medicine, whatever that medicine is,
to be available to their community for patients that doctors have signed off on, end quote. Yesterday, law enforcement officials from Washington County, where corporations like Nike and Tektronix are headquartered, offered support for the bill, claiming dispensaries would lead to, quote, criminal activity, loitering, increased traffic, noise, litter, and a loss of trade, end quote. Officials in Colorado can't point to any increases in stoned driving since marijuana legalization was voted into the state's constitution. Part of the problem is that until January, police and courts hadn't tracked DUI data by type of drug involved. The state toxicology lab had reported an increase in marijuana-positive samples, but then ceased drug and alcohol testing in July when a scandal revealed a supervisor was biased in favor of prosecutors. The two labs that have picked up the slack can't compare their last year's data to their new increased workloads. While nationwide incidence of cannabis and fatality drivers' bloodstreams has tripled since 1999, researchers conclude that's just a measure of marijuana's increasing popularity, since blood tests can reveal marijuana use long after impairment fades. Colorado hasn't seen an increase in impaired driving stops or driving fatalities since legalization. Alcohol still remains by far the greatest impaired driving danger, as marijuana was cited in less than 1 in 23 post-conviction drug and alcohol evaluations. On Monday, rising GOP star Florida Senator Marco Rubio was asked by the National Journal if he had ever smoked pot. Rubio declined to answer, saying, quote, "If I tell you that I haven't, you won't believe me. If I tell you that I did, then kids will look up to me and say, well, I can smoke marijuana because look how he made it," end quote. "At this point, it's irrelevant," end quote. It's curious how kids wouldn't look up to, say, Barack Obama, Bill Gates, Michael Phelps, Richard Branson, or Rihanna, successful people who've admitted past marijuana use, rather than a GOP senator from Florida with a penchant for dry mouth. It's also odd he considers his past use irrelevant when his state will be voting on medical marijuana this November. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, February 11th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available exclusively at the National Cannabis Coalition. Visit ncc420.com for downloads. When we come back, we'll go behind the headlines and take a look at how the issue of marijuana legalization is affecting gubernatorial races across the country. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I want to thank you for listening to 420 Radio. We couldn't survive without you and our sponsors, and I'd like you to check out one of our prime sponsors, the National Cannabis Coalition. I've been working with NCC since June of 2012, and I'm proud to be part of the team they have assembled. National Cannabis Coalition is building the partnerships with reformers, lawmakers, and industry we need to be successful. Visit the National Cannabis Coalition website at nationalcannabiscoalition.com or the easier-to-remember ncc420.com. That's where you'll get the exclusive first look at my radical rants, as well as informative articles from the nation's top cannabis pundits. Visit ncc420.com today, and if you have your phone handy, text Russ to 420-420 to support NCC and 420 Radio. It's a free text message that helps us help you end adult marijuana prohibition. Learn more at ncc420.com, and thanks for supporting independent marijuana legalization public radio.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, home of the famous lighter leash. Herb Age Designs. Get your Herb Age t-shirts and hoodies and show your pride. Herb Age Designs. We've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter. We'll see you at this year's Hemp Fest. Crank it up.
The
The Russ Belville Show with Radical Russ Belville from Portland, Oregon, live weekdays, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. GMT, with replays at 6 a.m. and 9 a.m., 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on 420radio.org. Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And for today's look, we're going to take a gander at the various political races that are being shaped by marijuana legalization in this country. It's becoming a serious political issue. And that's one of the top benefits of marijuana legalization in Colorado and Washington. I mean, now the politicians in the other 48 states have to address the issue. I mean, this was once considered like a radical abstract proposal, and now it's a pretty mainstream political reality. This is something supported by 58% of Americans. So finally, some politicians are recognizing this rising green tide of freedom and prosperity, and they're actually basing their candidacy partially on their support of marijuana reform. In Pennsylvania, for example, one Democratic gubernatorial candidate is openly calling for full recreational legalization of marijuana. John Hanger's his name. He's a lawyer and he's a former secretary of Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection. And he's calling for the immediate legalization of medical marijuana and immediate decriminalization of personal possession, followed by an evaluation of those reforms. And if they turn out like we expect, he then calls for full legalization in 2017. Now, in response to that, another Democratic candidate for the governor of Pennsylvania, U.S. Representative Allison Schwartz, said she too supports medical marijuana and decriminalization of personal possession. Now, that's quite a turnaround for a politician who had once received a negative 10 ranking from Normal on marijuana issues. I mean, in the last Congress, she voted against the Rohrabacher amendment that would have protected patients in medical marijuana states. And of the other six Democrats that are running for governor in Pennsylvania, another one of them was cautiously supportive of legalization. Four of them agreed with decriminalization and medical marijuana, and only one of them rejected decriminalization. Now, she actually hesitantly rejected medical marijuana too, saying, and I quote, "The FCC regulates our medicines," end quote. Well, of course she means the FDA. Now, Pennsylvania is not the only state. Maryland, Heather Mazur, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, she's a Democratic state delegate, and she's running for governor, and she's calling for the decriminalization of marijuana. You've got Florida, where the former Republican governor, Charlie Crist, who has now turned into a Democrat, he's trying to get his old job back, and he's offering full support for medical marijuana that's on the ballot in Florida in November. Then you got Texas gubernatorial hopeful Wendy Davis. You remember her for her sneaker filibuster of abortion rights last year when she got all the national news? She supports medical marijuana and would consider decriminalization. And this is not a red state or a blue state issue. I mean, red states like Kentucky, Missouri, Tennessee, and West Virginia, and blue states like Minnesota, New York, Ohio, and Wisconsin, they're all considering medical marijuana legislation. And the candidates for office in those states are kind of forced to stake out a position. And on another front, hemp is also in the political mix. You got Kentucky Agriculture Commissioner James Comer. He's made it his signature issue, and he's brought along Republican U.S. Senators Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul. And we even managed to get an amendment to the Farm Bill passed that greenlights hemp research in the 10 states that have it, that have hemp legalization. And in Texas, we interviewed just last week the former gubernatorial candidate who's now running for agriculture commissioner, Kinky Friedman. He's openly touting the environmental and economic benefits of hemp. And meanwhile, my favorite part, at the national level, the officials from the DEA and the Drug Czar's office are getting routinely embarrassed in congressional hearings when they're grilled by Democratic congressmen like Colorado's Representative Jared Polis or Oregon's Representative Earl Blumenauer, and especially, oh, Tennessee Representative Steve Cohen. And even stalwart marijuana opponents like Republican Senator John McCain are changing their tune on legalization. He said in a town hall meeting last year, quote, "Maybe we should legalize." This is John McCain. "Maybe we should legalize. We're certainly moving that way as far as marijuana is concerned. I respect the will of the people." A politician respecting the will of the people. What a refreshing change. That's right, folks. It's the days of being a politician who can be wishy-washy, can waffle on the marijuana issue, are over. They'd better get behind the popular support for marijuana legalization and find themselves out of a job. All right, it's 20 after. Time for us to take a break. I hope you have something green to enjoy. We'll be right back with our Daily Toker Tunes.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical RUSS on the Russ Belville Show.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting-edge genres. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
Welcome back, everybody. 23 after the hour, and we reach out to Arizona, where our good friend Electric Bob is joining us by telephone. How you doing, Bob?
I'm kind of sick, but I'm doing good. How you doing, Russ?
No, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, I'm doing all right. You know, we're kind of frozen in here in Portland, Oregon, so we're making the best of it.
I have my window open and my fan blowing.
That's fantastic. Hey, I want to encourage everyone to check out Electric Bob's Boogaloo. We got that great 45-minute show, nonstop mix. It's been really eye-opening and mind-expanding for me because I don't know a whole lot about the genre, and you've kind of given me a look at a lot of different looks and feels of electronic music. Can you give us a preview of what's coming up on the next episode?
I still got to do a mix. I'm going to do one tonight. I haven't figured out what I'm going to do yet. There's a lot of ideas in my head.
Yeah. What are some of the stuff that you've covered already?
I've covered drum and bass. I've covered old school 90s rave, UK hardcore, two-step garage, dubstep, electro house, progressive house. I've done between the five shows I've done, every mix has been much different than the last one.
Yeah, it sure has.
I don't want to get into the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, I was going to say it sure has, and I encourage people to go on to our 420radio.org site, scroll down a bit, and you'll find the Electric Bob's Boogaloo page. You'll find the archives out there, and you can give them a listen on demand. Catch the next episode coming up Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Pacific time. All right, so we've got a tune here for our Electric Electric Tuesday, which gives you kind of a sample of what you'll get on Electric Bob's Boogaloo. Tell us about this tune.
This is Anushka. This track just came out last month. This is a remix by Ivy Lab. Anushka, they're out of Brighton, UK. They're a house duo. It's a guy and a girl, and they just, I don't know much about them. I just found out about the song about a week ago, and I've been grooving to it all week. And this is the drum and bass mix by Ivy Lab, and Ivy Lab is just a collaboration of three DJs.
All right, let's check it out. This is Anushka, Never Can Decide, the Ivy Lab remix. Thank you, Electric Bob, and look forward to your show tomorrow night.
Awesome.
You want me to change? joker from the day I fall asleep with your heart round my neck. What if I picked the joker from the day?
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420.
In the afternoon, if I'm home, I smoke marijuana.
You're listening to Radical Russ. On the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, marijuana. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I got my ganja.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Stony Sundays, starring Coral Reefer from San Francisco, California, Mondays at 5 p.m. Pacific on 420radio.org.
The best weapon you can have in the Prohibition War is your mind. Fill your head with the knowledge you need by checking out this latest entry in the Russ Belville Show's Reformers Reader.
Welcome back, everyone. 33 after the hour, and on today's Reformers Reader, we have a bit of a change-up because we're usually covering books that are nonfiction, like grow books or reference books, but today we get our first foray into the world of fiction with this book, Killer Weed, an Ed Rosenberg mystery, by our guest, Michael Castleman. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being on, and I appreciate your willingness to reschedule. We had some scheduling issues, and I'm glad we could get this to work out. You know, I was looking over your book, and I saw, you know, the first thing that jumped out at me are some of the endorsements, the recommendations from this book from people like Grace Slick and Wavy Gravy, even some activist people we know here from the show, like William Panzer and Ed Rosenthal. And can you tell us a little bit about your book, Killer Weed, this Ed Rosenberg mystery?
Well, Russ, Killer Weed is a murder mystery, but it is set in the world of the Haight-Ashbury in the 1960s through the present day, and it covers the careers of three dope dealers who get their start at San Francisco State in 1965, and it basically follows them through contemporary time and what happens to them as their business evolves with the evolving marijuana industry in America.
And that's,
and it's, yeah,
I was going to say, that's the part that I really enjoyed about this, is it being not just a conventional murder mystery book, but also kind of a historical document, you know, a historical coverage of the San Francisco Haight-Ashbury culture, something that maybe some of the newer marijuana aficionados aren't as clued into.
Absolutely. I was irritated. I've been irritated over the years that, number one, a lot of the journalism and documentation of what happened in the Haight-Ashbury in the 60s is simply wrong. It's just not correct. And I wanted to correct it. And the other thing was that I was shocked that with the enormous amount of journalism that is done about the marijuana industry, no one had ever really done a historical analysis of the entire sweep of the industry from when marijuana first became popular in the United States in the early 1960s through the present day. And so as I was toying with the idea of having one of my Ed Rosenberg mysteries, all of them are set in San Francisco, so the Haight-Ashbury is like right over the hill from me, and I lived there for many years, and I thought, you know, somebody ought to do this. And then I thought, well, maybe I can. So that was why I crafted the book to reveal the hidden history of the real Haight-Ashbury, what actually happened there, and talk about the four phases of the marijuana industry in America, which are, as I'm sure your listeners know, initially importation from Mexico and the Caribbean, then importation from Colombia, from Colombian freighters out in international waters, and then going to outdoor growing, and finally indoor growing today.
And you mentioned what the journalism has gotten wrong about Haight-Ashbury that you're seeking to correct. Can you give us some examples of some of the most glaring inaccuracies?
Well, the main one is that the Haight-Ashbury was actually a very small village. It was really the whole Haight scene in 1965, 6, and 7 was only a couple hundred people. A few rock bands, the people involved in the San Francisco Oracle, one of the original underground newspapers, and kids from San Francisco State and elsewhere who gravitated to the Haight-Ashbury because it was a down-at-the-heels neighborhood where rents were very cheap. And that was where the marijuana culture in San Francisco moved from the jazz clubs, the black neighborhoods of San Francisco, into this little white youth enclave. And a lot of people felt like there was something really special happening in San Francisco. That's not true. What was happening in San Francisco was happening all over the country. I was living in Michigan at the time, and even before the word hippie was coined, there were lots of us who were essentially hippies smoking reefer. But what happened in San Francisco was that the publisher of the San Francisco Oracle organized a lifestyle festival for proto-hippies, and that was what became, in January of 1967, the Human Be-In that featured Timothy Leary and the Grateful Dead and the Jefferson Airplane. And the Be-In attracted 10,000 people, including all the news media, and the national media have bureaus in San Francisco. And so all of a sudden, you know, the guy, the bureau chief of the New York Times is thinking, God, what's happening out in Golden Gate Park? And it was the Human Be-In that made the media notice hippies, and the media located hippiedom in the Haight-Ashbury, directly adjacent to Golden Gate Park, when in fact, it was really a national phenomenon.
Haight just got just happened to be the place they focused on when it could have been, you know, any other major city in America, you're saying?
Yeah, it could have been, you know, I was in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Could have been there. Could have been Madison, Wisconsin. I mean, Austin, Texas. The reason that the news about the Human Be-In and the hippie Haight resonated so dramatically around the country was that the same upwelling of sentiment was happening everywhere. These were kids who were alienated from middle-class conformity after World War II. They were energized by the civil rights movement. They were facing the draft and did not like the Vietnam War. And all of a sudden, there was marijuana, which opened their minds and then blew them.
We're speaking with Michael Castleman. He's the author of Killer Weed, which is a mystery novel partially set in the 1960s Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco. And as you were discussing the book here and its relation to the culture and Haight-Ashbury and everything that was going on there, I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned Jefferson Airplane, Grateful Dead. How many real world experiences and real life people's experiences are included in your book, and how much of it is more just your imagination?
Well, that's an excellent question, Russ. Thank you for asking. The book is fiction, but it is set, it's the history in it is historically accurate. So when I talk about the San Francisco Oracle and what that was about, or the small town nature of the hippie Haight-Ashbury, or how young hippies ran pot across the Mexican border before the DEA was created. All of that is absolutely true. So is all of the information about money laundering, which is a big part of the book, because, you know, dumb dope dealers sell for cash, buy fancy cars, don't report anything on their taxes, and then the IRS comes and says, hey, dude, you know, you had an income of $8,000 last year, but you owned two Mercedes. How did that happen? Smart dealers always establish front businesses to launder their money. And my guys had a wonderful front business. They imported tropical houseplants from Mexico in the same truck that they imported the weed. They bought an old step van, an old UPS van. They created hidden compartments in the walls and floor, which they filled with marijuana, and then they filled the entire back of the truck with schefflera and dizygothicas and philodendrons and other houseplants, got an agricultural import license from the USDA, and wholesaled to plant stores all over California. Meanwhile, they could then funnel their drug money through the business, and they paid themselves salaries and had W-2s and paid their taxes. And if they got caught, they would risk state prison time, but the IRS could not come after them for failure to report income, tax evasion. And that is how the big dealers and all the bootleggers during the Depression, that's what really nailed them. Not possession of illegal drugs, but failure to report the income from sales.
Yeah, we're speaking with Michael Castleman, author of Killer Weed, and you can get a copy of Killer Weed for yourself. I'm sure it's available on Amazon. Are there other outlets where you'd like to promote where people can get your book?
Wherever fine books are sold, they can either either they have the book or they can order it, and you can get it in a few days. Killer Weed is widely distributed, and I hope that your listeners check it out.
I hope they do too. And you know, just from the endorsements alone, a lot of people I really respect, and other people, you know, who I've admired from afar, like, you know, Grace Slick and Wavy Gravy and so forth. People who were there in the thick of it are giving you very, very great reviews on this book. Have you heard from others who have read the book, who lived during that time, giving you any feedback?
Oh yeah. Lots of old hippies have gotten a hold of me and said, well, like Grace Slick, for example, we have a mutual friend. I'm not personally acquainted with Ms. Slick, but we have a mutual friend, and he laid a manuscript on her, and she said it was very refreshing to hear actually someone tell the truth about what the hippie Haight was actually like. That it was, you know, it was low rent, kind of scuzzy, and small. Everybody knew everybody. It was literally, it was a few hundred young adults. That's all it was. The same with Wavy Gravy and Ed Rosenthal. Ed Rosenthal, who I've admired for, you know, decades, as the guru of growing, he was very impressed with the money laundering element of the book, because that's really the heart of dope dealing. It's, you know, anybody can walk around and sell weed. But if you're going to make a business out of it, you have to survive the fact that it's an illegal business, a clandestine business, and the only way to do that is to launder your money. So he liked that, and lots of old hippies have thought the book's really a lot of fun, and you know, the other thing is that the other element of Killer Weed is that the protagonist, Ed Rosenberg, who is not Ed Rosenthal, but Ed Rosenberg, is a stoner, and he and his wife have just been laid off from their jobs, and he's using a lot of, he's smoking more weed to cope, which she does not like, and meanwhile, she's drinking more alcohol, which he can't stand, and so the book also deals with, at the micro level, a couple and their own drug use.
That's it.
There?
Yeah. Yes, I'm there. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Michael Castleman, for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show. And I encourage everyone to pick up a copy of Killer Weed. It's a good read and great information on our culture. Thank you so much, Michael, for your research.
Thanks, Russ.
All right. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. We're going to take a look at Patrick Kennedy talking to Stephen Colbert and telling him to invest in rehabs. Wait till you see this.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
Four 20 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally.
Anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Last night, Patrick Kennedy, the founder of Project Sam, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, appeared on the Colbert Report on Comedy Central, and he had some pretty shocking things to say. We join you a minute and a half into the interview as Stephen Colbert begins to ask him about his crusade against marijuana legalization.
You say they have a mental illness because of the stigma against the illness.
Okay, now you got a new axe to grind here. You're opposed to marijuana legalization, okay? You're a young, popular Democrat. Why are you Admiral Buzz Shackler on this one? I'm with you, and I'll tell you why in a second. I agree with you, and I also disagree with you for two different reasons. But first, but make your case to America right now. Why should we not legalize pot? Because it's happening. Colorado's doing it. Washington State's doing it. 20 states have legal medical marijuana.
Well, I am a good liberal Democrat, and I don't like big business. And so this is the big business of addiction because...
All right. So Kennedy says he's a good liberal Democrat and doesn't like big business. So apparently the marijuana market should remain in the hands of criminals. We wouldn't want to have tax-paying, law-abiding businesses who create jobs and revitalize our economy getting involved in marijuana because, as Kennedy says, it's the big business of addiction. Listen to him as he continues.
Marijuana is now moved from the hemp shirts to the briefcases and blue suits. They're trying to sell this new big business, just like big tobacco and big liquor, on the notion that they can make a profit off of people like me who are addicts, because that's where their money is. Their money is at people like me.
Now, see, that's fascinating to me that Patrick Kennedy is so worried about big tobacco and big alcohol, considering that during his 8 terms as a congressman from Rhode Island, he received hundreds of campaign contributions from big alcohol and big tobacco. And as a matter of fact, about $500,000 in contributions from big casino gambling, alcohol, tobacco, and gambling. I would call those the big three trifecta of corporate gambling or corporate addiction industries. Didn't have any problem taking their money back then.
People like me who are addicts, because that's where their money is. Their money is at people like me who like to use more than is really acceptable.
Okay, that's the one.
More than is really acceptable. People like Patrick Kennedy who use more marijuana than is really acceptable kind of says to me that there's some acceptable level of marijuana use that some people can use. Gosh, Patrick Kennedy, why don't we just legalize that? Why don't we legalize that acceptable level of use? You know, like, let's say an ounce or less for adults 21 and over.
That is the one part of this that I do like. Because as an investor, I just found out there's this whole enormous market called pot. That has been making billions of dollars off book for years. Now I can put my money investing into these Colorado companies that are getting the stankiest bud possible. Okay? And I can make a buttload of cash. Why shouldn't I do that?
That's the big thing about this new industry is they're going to advertise. So you get free Lyft. When you get your Lyft ticket, you get free joints when you go to... Yeah,
is that true? Is that happening?
Yeah, that's really... No, the ad.
It's already happening?
And, you know, if you can get the brownies and cookies, all THC, you can get sodas with THC in it now. So most people think legalization is allowing me to smoke marijuana on the weekends. It's now being able to sell products with THC in it.
Okay.
He says that as if that's a scary thing, and he keeps referring to this marijuana industry as if marijuana has just been invented by legalization. Hate to break the news to you, Patrick Kennedy, there already exists a big marijuana. It just goes by the name Sinaloa Gulf and Juarez Cartel. There's already a big marijuana. It's 1 million teenage marijuana dealers in the high schools. Big marijuana already exists. And I don't know if you knew this, but people have been making pot brownies since about the days of Alice B. Toklas. It's not like these new edibles are anything new. It's something that's been done for years and years.
And now I want it to be illegal again. Okay. Okay. Because I don't. I mean, here's the thing. I think it should be really illegal, though. You get arrested and you go to jail. Okay, you're for decriminalization?
No, I'm for keeping it illegal, but I'm for alternative sentencing. I think people should pay fines. I think they should get treatment if they need it. And that's why I passed the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act, because I think there ought to be a checkup from the neck up.
So you go to,
when you go to the doctor.
So instead of going to jail, you go to rehab?
So, well, rehabs are going to love this. Another thing.
Should I invest in rehab?
You should invest in rehabs. You are.
Yes, you heard that right. Rehabs are going to love this. You should invest in rehabs, because he's got the plan to keep giving people fines, to keep it criminalized, give them fines and send them to treatment if they need it. And you can imagine a whole bunch of pot smokers are going to need it, and that Stephen Colbert should invest in rehabs.
Because the biggest new admissions now, and it surpasses cocaine and alcohol and methamphetamines, is marijuana.
That's not...
Believe it or not.
Yeah, I don't believe it because it's not true. According to TEDS A, the admission statistics done for the public admissions to rehabs in the United States, there are twice as many people admitted for alcohol as are admitted for marijuana. And yes, the admissions for marijuana have tripled since 1992. But you know what else has gone up since 1992? Marijuana arrests have more than doubled, and drug courts have increased from 10 to 2,600 drug courts that sentence adult cannabis consumers to rehabs, and that's where your statistic comes from.
Yeah, invest in that and invest in marijuana. You'll make out in both respects. Yeah.
Do you smoke pot? You don't do substance abuse anymore. Did you smoke pot?
If the kind of marijuana that was available today was available back when I was trying it, I could have eaten it. because it's these edibles that I could, because I had asthma, I moved on to other things to get high. I didn't smoke.
Wait a second. So if their pot had been legal then, maybe you would have stopped with
pot. Well, I might have stopped with pot, but then I wouldn't have finally realized that I had a problem because.
Can you just wrap your minds around that statement? I could have had pot edibles, but because I had asthma, I didn't smoke. There was no edibles available. So I moved on to alcohol and cocaine and OxyContin. He could have stopped with marijuana, but then he wouldn't have realized that he had a problem. Hey, Patrick, how about this possibility? Using marijuana could have not been a problem.
As marijuana would have kept me on the slow train to nowhere a lot longer.
Yes, the slow train to nowhere, along with Michael Phelps and Richard Branson and Barack Obama and Rihanna and Lady Gaga and some 26 million people in America who smoke pot annually. Yes, the slow train to nowhere.
Than cocaine or alcohol, where it's pretty hard after a while to ignore the fact that you have an addiction. But marijuana, you could smoke it for a long time and still be in denial. You know, my denial.
Wait a minute. So alcohol and cocaine create such an addiction problem, it is harder to ignore. It's more, it manifests itself more readily. Like, for example, getting high on OxyContin and alcohol and running your car into a barrier in Washington, D.C., not being arrested by the Washington, D.C. police, not given a field sobriety test, and given a ride home. Just a month after having another impaired driving incident in a parking lot in Rhode Island, and not ever being pleading guilty, but getting a plea deal that spares you all jail time and fines you just $350. Yes, that's the way it goes for Patrick Kennedy, at least.
It was tough to break. I was arrested several times. It was humiliated. But with marijuana, I probably would have been able to get away with it a lot longer than I did.
I'll tell you, I told you there were two things that worried me. The other thing that worries me is that if we make marijuana legal, it might cut into Xanax sales. Because pharmaceuticals, those things have got a sweet little edge to them. Should we make pharmaceuticals illegal as well? Because they're highly addictive.
Well, it's like OxyContin, which I was addicted to. You know what?
Was it lovely?
It felt really good. Okay. And you know what? That's now permissive. That's the problem with making marijuana legal, is it's a permissive environment. It's just like going in and saying, oh, it's medicine. I'll take it. I'll feel better. And I really worry about the future of our country. And with the anxiety level of our young people, the stress of our kids, we're just adding something else that may in the short run make them feel better, but in the long run is going to really cost them and cost our country.
Oh, well, Patrick, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
So there you have it, Patrick Kennedy from Learn About Sam, the smart approaches to marijuana, basically saying to all of us that marijuana has to remain illegal and we have to go to be arrested and have our lives ruined, because if it were legal, it would be such a benign drug that addicts like him could use it and have no discernible problems from it and never recognize that they actually have a drug problem. Instead, it's better that they don't have access to marijuana and then are forced to move on to hard drugs like alcohol and OxyContin and endanger public safety by impaired driving on the roads. And that's the best way, because then they hit bottom much sooner and much more drastically and they can recognize that they have a problem. What an entitled mindset you have, Patrick Kennedy. You're damn lucky you didn't kill anyone when you were driving around drunk and on hillbilly heroin. Meanwhile, you want to persecute and you want to arrest and you want to fine and you want to punish cannabis consumers like me, who have been shown amongst all the possible drugs you could ever take and get behind the wheel to be the least risk behind the wheel. You want to persecute us? You want to say we have addiction problems? You want to say that we can't handle it? Sorry, Patrick Kennedy. Even Stephen Colbert's audience knew you were full of hot air. They were laughing at you, not laughing with you. That's all the time we got here. But stay tuned for Toker Talk Radio up next. For everyone here at 420 Radio, I'm Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers. Hey, hey, hey,
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.